On this November morning, the sky's a little gray. The weather may not be what we wanted it to be today. It's not what I wanted it to be. But still, we're happy to be here together again, to be enclosed in a space that's warm, safe, and dry, to be blessed with music from the choir and the warmth of community. Yet outside these walls, in our city, our country, and around the world, people are struggling and need help. They're dealing with the aftermath of natural disasters such as the fires, the hurricanes, and the earthquakes that have plagued us over the last couple of months. Outside these walls, and even within these walls, people are dealing with physical and mental health issues and other personal and professional problems. We're facing environmental challenges internationally and even here locally, with proposals for a gas plant in Nicetown and a pipeline through neighboring Lancaster County. On top of all that, as if that wasn't enough, as a city, we're dealing with poverty and all its implications. As I shared with you earlier, in September, the U.S. Census Bureau reported that Philadelphia is still the poorest big city in America. And while the overall poverty rate went down across the country last year, in Philadelphia, more than a quarter of our population still lives in poverty. 37% of our children live in poverty. And if that's not bad enough, 12.2% of us are living in deep poverty. Again, put in real numbers, that's only $5,900 for a single person, or $12,500 for a family of four. How does this happen? How does this even happen in our society, in a nation as powerful as this one? There are lots of reasons. Among them, our underfunded public school system and the number of residents with low reading, writing, and math skills. They can't find suitable employment. If you don't have a decent job, it's hard to pay for decent housing. If you don't have a decent job, it's hard to buy food. If you don't have a decent job, you can't pay for health care. And let's not forget the effects of systemic institutional racism. It's hard to keep your head above water when there's an anchor tied to your ankle. It's hard, harder than we realize, for people of color in this city. They're three times more likely than whites to live in poverty here. The median income of African American households is only about half that of white households. By the time you factor in discrimination in education and hiring practices and the disproportionate rates of incarceration for people of color, it's easy to see how racism contributes to poverty in Philly, or anywhere else for that matter. It's a vicious cycle. According to UN Human Rights Director Mutumu Ritere, poverty is closely associated with racism and contributes to the persistence of racist attitudes and practices, which in turn generate more poverty. I can't overstate the magnitude of this problem. There's clearly need in our city. People need jobs, shelter, food, clothing, training, and education. And our current federal administration has already started cutting the programs and funding designed to help those most in need. So who's helping these folks? Who's fixing the problems? The city of Philadelphia does what it can through its shared prosperity program, which provides education, housing, and economic support for city residents. But it's not enough. President Obama declared portions of the Lancaster Avenue corridor a federal promise zone, which pumped millions of dollars in program support into the Mantua, Belmont, Powelton, Mill Creek, and Saunders Park neighborhoods. From my personal experience working in this area, I'd say it's barely made a dent for the local residents. Yes, there are some new homes and a few new stores in the area. I might even use the word gentrification to begin to describe what's happening there. But the poorest of the poor who live there are still being left out and left behind. As in Northern Liberties, parts of Grays Ferry, and portions of West Philadelphia, gentrification eases the blight and the neighborhoods become trendy, but the poor people simply get pushed to another area. Who will help them? Our colleges and universities are trying. Penn offers a free walk-in clinic on the corner of 42nd and Girard every Monday evening. Drexel serves a weekly free community meal, offers job training classes, and opened the city's first pay-what-you-can restaurant. Temple is doing things in North Philadelphia. And there are nonprofit agencies like the People's Emergency Center, where I used to work, Philadelphia Fight, Philabundance, and Impact Services Center. But these groups constantly struggle for funding and resources. Individual artists and musicians and neighborhood coalitions do what they can to help as well, but the problem seems insurmountable. Again, who will help the poor in our city and our country? I believe the answer lies in faith-based communities. Many of us, as people of faith, whatever your faith, feel we have a responsibility to help one another. As I begin to embark upon my own ministry, I'm hoping to find a settlement where my congregation can be deeply involved in anti-poverty and economic empowerment work. My religion, my personal faith, calls me to help those in need. This notion of helping others is not foreign to us as Unitarian Universalists. Our principles call us to recognize the inherent worth and dignity of every person and to promote peace, justice, and compassion in our society. We do that through our justice work and our community involvement. Here at USG, we support dozens of anti-poverty and community efforts on our Martin Luther King Day of Service and throughout the year. We're involved with the Coalition Against Mass Incarceration, immigration and anti-racism efforts, Rebuilding Together, and UU Plan. We're working to make sure that every student gets a decent education so that they at least have a chance at a successful future. Other faith traditions have similarly deep connections to service and charity. In Islam, the Quran emphasizes the practice of sadaqah, or voluntary almsgiving. Believers are encouraged to feed the hungry, clothe the naked, and help those in need. It is said that the more one helps, the more God helps the person, and the more one gives, the more God gives the person. In Judaism, this duty to serve others is expressed as part of tzedakah. Did I get it right, Mark? Close. This is different from or bigger than mere charity. It's derived from the Hebrew for righteousness, fairness, and justice. It's more than giving to the poor out of a sense of generosity. Rather, it's giving because to give is an act of justice and the right thing to do. This duty to give is found in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 5, verse 11. For there will always be poor people in the land. That is why I am giving you this order. You must open your hand to your poor and needy brother in your land. There's a corresponding duty in Hinduism. There is an encouragement to the faithful to strive constantly to serve the welfare of the world. By devotion to selfless work, one attains to the supreme goal in life. Hindus are charged to do their work with the welfare of others in mind. Christianity also encourages service to others. 1 Peter 4, verse 10 says, each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. The Bible and Christian teaching directs us to give and serve others. These are just a few examples. Despite our theological differences, many faith traditions are dedicated to community service. And many denominations support anti-poverty efforts here in Philly. Chosen 300 Ministries feeds thousands of people each year in its three locations across the city. The Sunday Breakfast Mission feeds and clothes hundreds. Many individual churches operate their own projects and missions. Maybe you've heard of the concept of radical hospitality. That's the theory that you welcome everyone into your community, no matter who they are. Well, I'm thinking, what if we practiced what I'm going to call radical collaboration? Working together across faith traditions for the common good. We might not agree on the existence of God or other theological points, but we could probably agree on the need to support and encourage service to others. And there are interfaith groups working together now. Many of you are familiar with and perhaps even support or volunteer with PIN, the Philadelphia Interfaith Hospitality Network. USG hosts PIN families every summer as they move from homelessness, hopefully to financial stability and forever homes. Our reading this morning came from the words of Reverend Dr. William Barber, whose Forward Together moral movement has brought together a diverse group of justice-seeking people in North Carolina and is inspiring other organizations nationwide. Here in Philly, we have Power. Philadelphians organize to witness, empower, and rebuild, an interfaith group that brings people together to drive change and seek justice and equality in our city. One of our priorities here at USG this year is to explore how we can be more involved with Power. Clearly, our city and our country need more organizations and efforts such as these. This is an issue that touches each of us personally, no matter our faith. We have to go beyond our thoughts and theology to work together. It is possible. And if we did, imagine how much good we could do. How much more of a difference it would make if we all worked together. As Lambeth University professor Jean Davenport says, differences of belief do not mean that we cannot work together for common social goals. It only makes sense that we should work together. If nothing else, the political events of this year have taught us that those who believe in peace, justice, equality, and protecting the environment have to stick together. So how can you get involved? What can you do? Maybe you're thinking, I'm only one person. Well, I've already mentioned pin and power. Keep your eye on the order of service and church emails for opportunities to volunteer and be involved with these organizations. My third year seminary final project is something I've named Interfaith Connection and Action. We're bringing together people from houses of worship in our neighborhood to complete a community project right here in Mount Airy. We'll decide as a group exactly what that project should be. It might be a food drive or cleaning up a park. And while we're working together, we'll have a chance to visit each other's worship services and build real connections. There's also our Martin Luther King Day of Service. We're recruiting volunteers and project leaders now. If you're interested in any of our social justice or anti-poverty or community works, please come to the Social Justice Fair next Sunday during coffee hour. We'll have information and sign-ups on all of these programs. Here's the thing. So many people are being left behind. We need to help them. If each of us did something, one thing, even one small thing, we could make a difference in someone's life. By working together across faith traditions, we can transform society. We have an opportunity to build community and do social justice work that can help others. So on this November morning, cloudy though it may be, and every day, may we always be mindful of our neighbor's struggles. May we commit ourselves to the eradication of poverty and the creation of a world where everyone has enough to eat, a safe place to live, and the opportunity to succeed. May we live into our principles and fully embrace the power of love to heal the divisions and the bitterness that plague our city and our nation today. May we forever be reminded that we're all in this together. May it be so.